I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The new movie, Won't Back Down, is about a crusading single mother played by Maggie Gyllenhaal, who's determined to fix her daughter's failing school. She teams up with a frustrated teacher played by Viola Davis, and together they take on the union and the administration and take over the school. Here's a scene from the film.
You want to start a school with me?
What?
I can't take this anymore, and somebody told me that if you find a teacher and you stick with it long enough, you can turn a school around. I'm going to go to district tomorrow, figure out how to do this. Could you take a sick day and meet me there?
The film has triggered a debate over parent trigger laws that have been adopted by seven states and are being written in other states, including here in Pennsylvania. These laws give parents more authority over what happens in their child's failing school, and in some cases, the power to run it themselves or change it into a charter. Today in Radio Times, we want to talk about parent trigger laws. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. Helen Gim is founder of Parents United for Public Education. That's a citywide parent group working to improve achievement and accountability in public schools in the city. She's also a board member at Asian Americans United. That's a Chinatown-based community organization. She blogs at the Philadelphia Public School Notebook and actually co-founded a charter school called the Folk Arts Cultural Treasures. Has been open for 8 years. And Helen, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. Also with us is Matthew Briette. He's the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives, which is based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He's a former high school teacher, former school board member. He's got his very own radio show and writes a bi-monthly column for the Central Pennsylvania Business Journal. And Matthew, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Let me begin with you, if I could, and actually begin in Harrisburg. There is a Senate bill, 1115. Mm-hmm. It's in the Pennsylvania Senate. What does that bill say about parent trigger laws?
Well, with regard to parent trigger law, it would allow for parents and teachers to come together in a school that has persistent failure or violence and say, the current system is not working for our kids. And joining together, they can create a charter school. They can do the types of things that, this movie, Won't Back Down, was talking about. So it has started in other states. Pennsylvania is under consideration of saying, should we give parents this type of control?
But you're talking about parents and teachers working together versus, the sense one gets from the movie, at least, is that it's parents versus teachers.
Well, it certainly has been portrayed as such, but of course the movie required parents and half of the teachers to come together. So this was seen as really parents and teachers coming together to fight a system that holds back not only the kids, but the teachers trapped in that system, teachers that want to do a great job for these kids.
What's the difference between that, though, and a PTA, you know, parent-teacher organization?
Well, in fact, that's the premise of this movie, of a mother in California, based on true stories. Of course, this is the Hollywood version of it. But this mother, Doreen Diaz, tried it through all these systems, working through the PTA, showing up at school board meetings. You can just imagine, you know, if you're a parent here in Philadelphia, where you've got lots of challenges, showing up at the school board meeting, the chances that your voice is going to be heard amongst the many is very limited. And so this is about a parent saying, hey, I've tried all these avenues. I've tried the PTA. I've tried showing up at school board. Nobody is hearing me. And this was that last ditch effort to try to save the school for her child.
Well, let me turn to you, Helen Gim, because in many ways that sounds just like you. I mean, you are clearly a parent activist here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm not Maggie Gyllenhaal, obviously, but I'd like to think that many of us play her in real life. You know, we're already in our schools, we're trying to effect change, and we're certainly not satisfied when we see schools that are struggling. I think the biggest thing, though, that I would say about Senate Bill 1115 is that it is not, it's sort of a tack on to a very important special ed bill and isn't well fleshed out. So, for example, it's my understanding that the bill doesn't talk about failing schools. It talks about conversion from public to charter. It only has two elements, which is 50% plus one of parents and 50% plus one of teachers. to sign a petition, which isn't standardized. So there's a lot of questions about, you know, there's no requirement, for example, to alert other people at the school. There's no requirement to help English language learners who may be at the school be aware of what's happening. And it becomes what we're concerned about, which is a very divisive process that, in fact, a small sector of people could talk about what to do with the school, you know, that can determine the fate of a community and a neighborhood much broader than themselves. And, you know, even if you like the idea of the parent trigger, I don't think that many people would be for a process that's so simplistic.
But if the process were improved from your perspective, would you be in support of this idea of parent trigger laws, the idea that if you can get a majority of parents in a school frustrated with what's happening inside that school, that they can have more authority, more power in determining what that school does?
Well, I support parent triggers that talk about how we can get more parent involvement in a school, absolutely, mm-hmm. and engaged in the way in which a school can turn out. Parent triggers are not defined that way, though. They're defined specifically to turn a school over to a charter entity, and that is typically what they look like. And, you know, honestly, I think that that's where some questions come in. In the movie, the idea of parents taking over a school themselves and then running it would be more likely to raise eyebrows mm-hmm. rather than elicit cheers, especially in Philadelphia, where we've had a lot of failed independent ventures and charter school scandals that we don't, you know, we just know that it needs to be a little bit more regulated than someone's good heart and goodwill.
And Matthew, one of the critiques of these bills is that it's really a way of getting charter schools, expanding charter schools, and taking students away from the public school system.
Well, certainly parents are clamoring for these types of options. Statewide, we have over 40,000 kids on waiting lists for charter schools, tens of thousands right here in Philadelphia. And part of it is the problem, the way in which we allow charter schools to open up. We say it's like requiring Wendy's to ask McDonald's for permission to open up a restaurant in their service area. Because if you're a charter school and you have parents wanting to get out of their locally assigned public school, you have to get permission from the school district. They're not all that willing to allow for competition to come in and for parents to be able to have those choices. And so this bill goes beyond just the parent trigger. It goes to what other states have done of a statewide authorizer so that you don't have this Wendy's McDonald's problem when it comes to charters. So I'm a supporter of every educational opportunity. I believe public education will be the dominant means by which kids are educated, but I want all these options because we know that that is what is going to best serve the individual needs of kids.
But are you saying that these parent trigger laws are a way of reforming education? Do you see it as a tool of education reform?
Oh, absolutely. I really believe that public education, the future of public education, is going to be more along the lines of the charter model, whereby we devolve the power from these distant bureaucracies and bring it more locally. I was the board member of a charter school, helped found and start that. And what we found is that when you have local leadership, local administration, local people making those decisions, that's really when you start to serve the needs of the community. And that's what I want to see across public education.
What do you want to see, Helen?
That would be great if that happened. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that I would be very careful about parent triggers being a very false sense of parent empowerment. So essentially, parents sign over their permission to a charter school entity that then runs it themselves. There's no indication that it improves parent empowerment. And it actually, you know, just to be a little bit more direct, one of the things I'm very concerned about with the new wave of education reform today is what I think of as the politics of derision and division. You know, a lot of scorn and disgust with the failures of public school, and then a divisive way of tackling it, which is splitting up parents and teachers, pitting people against one another, and then simply turning over the whole enterprise to another agency instead of really engaging people at the school to become themselves transformers. There's no way that parent triggers ensure that the parents at the school have any say in the actual running of the school.
Once the school is, let's say, taken
Correct.
Over by a charter.
Correct.
Well, and that's not the reality of what you have with charter schools. They have the oversight. We have seen charter schools be shut down. You don't see that in the traditional public schools. I mean, take, for instance, University City High School, just a stone's throw away from from Penn. Less than 5% of the students have been proficient in reading and math, and this has been persistent for almost a decade. Yet what happens? We say, well, we need more money. We need more time. We keep telling those parents to wait. Let's just come together. Let's figure this out. Instead of allowing those kids to have escape hatches, to go to another charter school or go to any school, that any school is going to be better where than 95% of the kids are not getting proficiency. This is a travesty. It's a tragedy. Yet we keep saying, wait, 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 give us more money, and nothing changes.
Go ahead, Hannah.
And just very quickly, I'd say that in the city of Philadelphia, where we've had charters and EMOs for over a decade, that we have not seen charters shut down. You know, just last year, there were 25 charters up for renewal. Only three were not renewed, and that may go down to two, depending on what happens. So many of those schools were low performers. You know, there's a lot of questions. I think it's hard to shut down a school. It's very difficult. And I think that as we open up new venues, there's just the reality. We've had 10 years of schools that don't shut down. The EMOs were horrible performers. Not a single one of them self-voluntarily shut down. They had to be shut down after extraordinary expense, after repeated academic failure. And what we want to be careful about is not replicating systems of failure. And we are seeing that very much. You know, our charter school system in Philadelphia educates 25% of our students. There's no indication that charter schools outperform other students. I think your tactic that saying that there are wait lists for them don't indicate any semblance of what the academic performance actually is.
Well, actually, on the latest PSSA scores, the statewide exams, you had 53% of the charter schools in the city of Philadelphia were achieving AYP, adequate yearly progress. We're only 13% of the traditional public schools. And so what you've seen is just on the testing that parents are finding that they are achieving better. And then also you have parents that are saying, hey, I might be choosing them for various reasons. I mean, we're experiencing the bullying that's going on. I think there's that case from last week of student just wearing a politically incorrect T-shirt to class is being bullied by it, not only students, but a teacher. That's reasons that parents are making choices. So it goes far beyond just academic results. It goes to even the safety issue that parents are looking for.
Go ahead, Helen. I've been it before.
Okay, speaker. And very carefully, I'm surprised you brought up that statistic, given the fact that the governor and the education secretary have been shown to have played around with the charter school AYP scores just for this year. And so, in fact, if you were to adjust the charter AYP for what they were assessed at last year, they would be equal. Roughly 15 and 13% made AYP. So it's not, I would be very careful about that statistic. And just to complete it out, you know, we have extraordinary barriers to enrollment, also to charters. My son is looking, he's in eighth grade, he's looking at 100 high school options. It is enormous. I could say that that's an extraordinary amount of choice. To me, it's overwhelming. Mm. It's very difficult to find out information. Only three of those schools meet or exceed the average SAT national average. You know, so it has me asking a lot of questions about what choice and what quality choice options have brought to me as a parent. Overwhelming choice is not the answer.
A very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Helen Gim and Matthew Briette, we began by talking about these parent trigger laws or bills that are being written in states across the country. And that's raised a whole host of questions about parent involvement, parent choice, charter schools. We'll take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Germantown Friends School, committed to providing academic excellence and Quaker values for boys and girls grades kindergarten through 12, hosting an open house on Saturday, October 13th at 1 p.m. To meet faculty, learn about art, drama, music, and athletics programs, and tour the 7-acre historic urban campus, including the Green Science Center. Germantown Friends School open house this Saturday, October 13th at 1 p.m. GermantownFriends.org.
I'm Mike and Scott. Listener support is vital to WHYY, and we'll be asking for yours during our upcoming membership campaign. But the October buyback is your chance to help give us a head start. Make a pledge during our October buyback, and for every 750 donations we receive, you'll buy back one day. This means one less day of pledge and one more day of news without membership breaks. Do your part at whyy.org/support. Thank you.
Phoebe specializes in healthcare, housing, and support services for senior adults. From independent living to rehabilitation services and skilled nursing, Phoebe offers continuing care retirement communities in Lehigh, Berks, Bucks, and Montgomery counties. On November 2nd, Phoebe presents the Institute on Aging Conference, featuring keynote speaker Larry Minix, CEO of Leading Age. The conference focuses on reclaiming advocacy duties to benefit seniors in our communities. Details at phoebe.org. Phoebe Ministries supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about something called parent trigger laws, and it looks like seven states have passed something called a parent trigger law, giving parents more power to make changes at their child's underperforming public schools. It's featured in this new film, Won't Back Down. There's a parent trigger bill in the Pennsylvania Senate. Talking with Matthew Briette, head of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives, and Helen Gim, founder of Parents United for Public Education. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We were just actually a very interesting debate that we were having off the air, and I don't want to get too in the weeds, but nonetheless, if you can just make your point, Helen, and make your point, Matthew, mm-hmm. and then we can move on from there. But it was interesting to hear your discussion.
There's a lot of questions going on right now about a recent report by the Morning Call that charter schools have a different standard for accountability and accuracy of their data. So, for example, charter schools are considered to be equivalent to school districts, even though most of them are individual schools. The AYP of a district is based on grade span, so they can average out the amount of children who meet AYP. Most district schools and individual schools must meet AYP per grade level. So the question has been this number of 53% that Matthew cited about charters making AYP was based on the fact that they were able to average out their scores. But I, as a parent, need to know when I look at Meredith School or Kearney Elementary School, whether they made AYP or not, they're being based per grade level. So I understand that. But if I look at Independence Charter or Mastery Charter Pickett, I may be looking at them averaging out over grade span, but it's not an equal comparison because I'm picking a charter school. I'm not picking a district.
Okay, fair enough.
What the governor and education secretary did is they made an apples to apples comparison between charter schools and traditional school districts because the way in which you did it before is it didn't give you an accurate picture. Now, Helen and I actually may agree on how we go about presenting this to parents so that they can have a good means of measuring the performance of schools. But this is part of the problem is that, we don't have a standardized means, and it wasn't even equivalent in the previous way in which they did it. We might debate over how they're doing it now, right. But I think that having an apples-to-apples comparison is an important process here.
Let me just quote something, and just to add a little bit to what you both were just saying. This is actually a new Stanford University report. It's the Center for Research on Education Outcomes at Stanford University finding, and this is broadly speaking, not Philadelphia, but across the country, found that 17% of charter schools reported academic gains significantly better than traditional public schools. 37% of charter schools showed gains that were worse than traditional public school counterparts, and 46% of charter schools demonstrating no significant difference. So it looks like, at least for charters, there's a mixed record.
Well, it's going to be mixed like you find in traditional public schools. Of course, you know, you've got a lot of schools that are failing persistently. The question is what are we going to do about that? Are we going to continue trapping parents in schools that are persistently underperforming? Or are we going to say, hey, we're going to give you options? And frequently what you find is that the parents that are trying to make choices is because they are not satisfied with what is being delivered in their assigned school district. So frequently these kids are going into a charter school behind. They're not going there because they're performing really well at the traditional public school. They're going there because they're seeking an alternative for whatever reason, whether it's safety or academic. And so this is what we want to see, is that more choices are ultimately going to drive, I believe, the quality up higher.
Let me turn back to you, Helen. I know you, there's something else you want to say, but let me just ask you, as someone who's been so involved in education reform in Philadelphia, what kind of options, what kind of tools does an individual parent have? If they have a problem with their local public school, they feel their child isn't learning in the way that they want them to learn, what options do they have?
You know, I think that the most important option that most parents try to do is try to work with their local public school. And if we had a very good public school system and if we had educational leaders who were responsive and understood the needs of communities, they would be responsive to concerns raised by parents. I think also that parents who work together and not just through singular kinds of issues, because lots of parents can have issues that range from very small things, personal, individualized kinds of issues, to issues that resonate amongst the group, that when parents work together, they're more likely to get something happening. And then if not, it becomes what Mr. Briette has raised, which is we get thrown out to a big, wide system of endless numbers of choices and not many of them being very good quality. So the notion that the more choices you have, the more quality you get is absolutely not true. And I think that my son's experience of looking at 100 different high schools, only three of which meet the median SAT average, is a really big question. We've expanded high school options endlessly to the point where parents can't even be assured. So the issue has never been about how much choice. It's always been about ensuring a quality choice option for every child, no matter what neighborhood they live in, whether or not they speak English, if they have special needs, learning needs, or whatever. And to that extent, the marketplace has never served us.
Marty, if I could, I don't think that that's real choice, what Helen is talking about, because we really don't have true choice in Pennsylvania. She may be able to choose amongst the public high schools. You're not going to have a whole lot of choice because that same centralized bureaucracy is telling those schools how to operate and preventing innovative teachers from doing their jobs, their professions. What we really need is broad choice, where we start funding kids rather than systems, and we start saying having this education marketplace. We lack that. So the notion of choice, that's really a farce. We don't have real choice in education today.
But I think one of the concerns is that if you have a system that allows individual parents to take initiative, mm-hmm. that might be all well and good, but what about the children that are, in a sense, left behind?
Well, that's the good thing.
How do we improve education for them?
Absolutely, and that's the good thing about choice is that it encourages and forces those schools to improve. I've seen it happen in other states. When you have an influx of a lot of, say, charter schools into a certain area, in a state where take Michigan, for example, where they don't allow the school district to deny charter schools from starting up within their district boundaries. You saw an influx of charter schools coming into public school districts. Kids were fleeing them. Parents were choosing these charter schools. An innovative superintendent said, hey, what are we going to do to stem this tide? What is it that parents are wanting? They actually went out and did market research to find out why parents were leaving the traditional public schools, and they reformed themselves and changed themselves and started treating their parents and kids as consumers rather than just as a captive audience. So we see this happen in the marketplace all over. It can happen in education.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just, think that the studies have borne out tremendously, not the least of which have been in Philadelphia, but let's start with Milwaukee. 22 years, started out initially with vouchers, the ultimate choice, trigger, I guess you would call it, moved into charters and still struggling. And Philadelphia has had 11 years of a state takeover that promised us the best system that we were going to have. And 11 years later, we're struggling with bankruptcy. We're looking to close schools. We've got a massive charter system that isn't well regulated, well done, doesn't ensure high quality options for ourselves, hasn't improved the public schools. In fact, we see, tremendous burdens on public schools, even the ones that are performing really well around budget cuts and other kinds of issues. We're losing 3,000 teachers, scientists, and artists and musicians. And I just think that the notion that, and we have tremendous barriers for students to get into charters. We have 25% of our students are in charters. Less than 1% of our ELL population is served by them, English language learners, immigrant students. So, it's just this false notion. And really, I would ask readers, if we've given up on this idea that we as a society can educate all children equally to the best quality and in their neighborhoods. And I think that that's still a concern that not a lot of people are thinking about. The parent trigger laws have a lot to do with people who want to do things to schools and don't care about what happens in them.
And that's Helen Gim. She's the founder of Parents United for Public Education here in Philadelphia, and Matthew Briette, head of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives, located or headquartered in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We're talking about parent trigger laws. There is a parent trigger bill in the Pennsylvania Senate, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're curious about what you think about these parent trigger laws or the bill in the Senate, or and what it raises for you about parent choice and school choice. Let me get, looks like Patty from Reading to join us on Radio Times. And Patty, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. The biggest question that always comes to my mind, and I'm a teacher and I've been a teacher for 20 years, is that in any discussion of schools and whether or not schools are failing, and it seems to be a very big political hot topic right now, everybody wants to talk about it, but nobody in any of that conversation ever addresses the other issue, which is that as a teacher, I am limited in my ability to make any sort of a change in terms of a student's behavior, because I'm limited by where that student goes home to and the support that I have from his parents and from his family. And I don't understand why in education in general, in educational reform, we don't look more at these schools. Some of them are failing, mm-hmm. and I think charter schools sometimes look better because they have the support of parents, and the parents who are supportive and want more for their children will put their children in an educational environment where they can succeed. And the public schools don't have that option. And there's only so much that we can do to change the way a student succeeds. And why aren't we looking more at helping some of those other families who are struggling to support those kids?
No, fair enough. Patty, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We always love hearing from teachers. Matty, let me toss that first to you, which is that, you know, parent support generally leads to a better schools.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, obviously a good teacher is critically important in the classroom, but parental support is key. And I knew that from my own teaching days, that if I didn't have parents, or I had parents who thought, oh, I'll just drop them off at school and you take care of that, that doesn't work. I fully understand that. But when you tell parents that, hey, you don't have a choice, just we're the professionals, let us handle this, you allow for a lot of parents to abdicate their responsibility. And then when you deny teachers and I think administrators the ability to deal with those problems, if they become a problem in the classroom, you are definitely handcuffing our teachers, and then you're harming the kids that really want to be in that classroom. I know that one difficult child can ruin an entire classroom. You know, one can occupy 90% of your time. You have to be able to deal with that. So part of this is all about how we create schools where we don't allow for the disruptions or parents that are negligent in their responsibilities. I believe that part of this is all about this school choice effort. I believe that that helps address this. Just forcing parents into the one-size-fits-all approach that too many people are advocating in their denial of parent trigger and denial of these more choices, unfortunately, we're going to get more of the same, not a reform of that.
Go ahead, Helen Gim.
I guess I don't think you answered Patty's question, which I think Patty's question was about what do we do about the 50% of students, or, you know, the portion of students and families in our school who are struggling with parents who either are not able, don't have time, can't afford to, you know, have this engagement that's necessary. And I guess the question is, if what you're saying is just throw it wide open to the marketplace and see what happens, that to me is not answering her question. I think what we need to do is really double down on taking a look at investing in our schools and trying to find a way to engage and reach out to these parents, to build truly community schools, to talk about curriculum that's, you know, that's responsive to schools. We have local site councils that work where parents have a real involvement and in policies like teacher evaluations or discipline, and we're not asked to rubber stamp policies that are made elsewhere, you know. And so that to me is a definition of true parent empowerment and engagement in a school. that isn't a parent trigger, and that isn't, you know, unless we try to do that within our public systems, I don't see that answering that very important question that,
look,
that Patty's asking.
We've tried what Helen is suggesting. I mean, in the last 15 years, we have more than doubled the amount of money we're spending in public education. In Philadelphia, we're spending over $17,500 per student. We have had a decline. We've had a decline in student
population. Where are you getting that number?
This is from the Pennsylvania Department of Education. Yes, you can find the student. We can certainly provide that if you're challenging the number.
Paying what? I mean, literally paying what are paid in the suburbs?
Yeah, we are paying $17,000 with a total combined of state, local, and federal dollars in the Philadelphia public schools, $17,500 in the 2010-11 school year. That is the per pupil expenditure that we have on average. This is the statewide, we are about $15,000 per student. So we are spending a lot of money in public education. This is all available on the Department of Education website. And at the same time, we have had a decline of 35,000 students statewide, yet we've added 35,000 teachers. So the idea that we aren't doing everything from putting more money, more resources to solve these problems, I don't think that solves the problem of what Helen, I don't think, even answered the question of what you do with parents that aren't taking their responsibilities.
Well, what do you do?
Ultimately, we're never going to be able to force every parent to be responsible for their child. But we have to create environments for the parents that do, and that those who want a good education can be able to access one instead of trapping them in classes or in schools where they're bullied or they're not learning.
But are you saying then give the parents who want this option of choice, give them the choice and let the other children and parents essentially fend for themselves or even forget about them?
No, not at all, because I will tell you this. In my own teaching experience, because I taught in the inner city and I taught in a suburban, beach community, actually. If I were to go back into the classroom, I would love the inner city environment because that was the most rewarding for me, the relationships I developed, even to this day from over 20 years ago. I have those relationships with some of my students. Those are the types of people that we want to get into the inner cities that know how to deal with these kinds of kids and parents that have abdicated that want to play that role. So this is where we need to head.
Go ahead, Helen.
If the idea is like shopping for charters is like shopping for milk, you know, this famous line that Jeb Bush said at the Republican National Convention, it's just it's a ludicrous thing. And I really do think that there is the question of equity, and as my colleague who works at a think tank which promotes free market principles, that's your position. But I'm a parent, I need to look for these schools. And it is an extraordinarily difficult thing, and it becomes even more complicated when you said, I'm just going to triple the number of schools that you can take a look at. I'm going to have, questionable amounts of data. I'm not going to really, I'm just shocked. And at the same time, like, this is going to substitute for investment in your neighborhood school. I'm really kind of shocked to hear that you would promote that this state really invest in public education when we have a governor that has been very explicit that education in his first budget was called a nice to have instead of the must haves. And so, it's just a really big question about investing
and
practical kinds of things rather than ideologues and kind of think tank kind of stuff that's spun out.
Let me just, a quick question to you, Matt, and we have to take a break, but shouldn't the goal of any district or any state or even in this country be to educate all children?
Absolutely.
In the best possible ways
Absolutely.
That we possibly can.
Well, what's happened in America is that public education has come to mean a monolithic government-run enterprise, that we're going to say, well, government is going to determine what's best for your child. We'll assign you to your school because of your zip code, and that your choices are going to be severely limited. I want to return to the original intent of public education in America, and that is the education of the public. And that comes through diverse means. It's going to be public education. It's going to be charters. It's going to be traditional public schools, cyber schools, home schools, private schools, religious schools. That is what is going to make America great, and that is really what's going to bring back community in America.
And that's Matthew Briette, head of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives, headquartered in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Helen Gim, also with us, founder of Parents United for Public Education. She works in the Philadelphia area, and we're taking calls and we'll be right back, as a matter of fact.
Supporting WHYY, the Exit Zero International Jazz Festival in Cape May, New Jersey, November 9th through 11th. The Cape May Convention Hall and 8 club venues will feature jazz performances throughout the weekend, such as Ramsey Lewis and his electric band on Saturday, November 10th. Other festival highlights include wine tastings and Meet the Artist events. Congress Hall in Cape May is the official festival hotel. For tickets, reservations, and other festival details, exit0jazzfest.com or 609-849-9202.
Everything we do and feel can be considered a habit. Research tells us that while habits, especially negative ones, seem to drive us, by understanding them, we can take the reins and transform our lives. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, Creatures of Habit. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Early breast cancer detection means better outcomes. The Women's Cancer Center at Fox Chase offers an array of risk assessment, genetic counseling, and screening options. Fox Chase has been named a Breast Imaging Center of Excellence by the American College of Radiology for Mammography, Breast Ultrasound, Breast MRI, Ultrasound Guided Biopsy, and Stereotactic Biopsy. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, now part of Temple Health.
We're having a very lively conversation off the air, I have to say, between Helen Kim, or with Helen Kim, founder of Parents United for Public Education, also a board member of Asian Americans United. She blogs at the Philadelphia Public School Notebook and co-founded a charter school a couple of years ago called Folk Arts Cultural Treasures. Matthew Briette, president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. He's a former high school teacher, former school board member, and he has a bi-monthly column for the Central Pennsylvania Business Journal. He also has a radio show as well. I do want to get to our callers because I want to make sure that we have some more input from our listeners. And we have Linda from Medford joining us on Radio Times.
Hi,
Linda. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling from Medford, New Jersey.
Yes.
Yeah, I was calling because what I wanted to know is if you have triggers in place for parents to convert public schools to charters, what's in place to protect parents when charters go astray from their mission?
Well, you have, you know, in Pennsylvania, and, you know, Helen was talking about the lack of regulation and oversight. It's the Philadelphia Public School District that is supposed to have oversight. They are the charter authorizer of all of the charter schools in the city of Philadelphia. So ultimately, you are condemning the very same people that are running, well, University City High School, where more than 95% of the kids are not proficient in reading and math. In part of this legislation that was kind of the premise of this discussion is to establish a statewide authorizer at the state level. Now, will that be better? I don't know. Ultimately, what you have in what makes a charter school far different than the traditional public school is that nobody is forced to go there. And ultimately, it's going to be the consumers, parents. It's going to be like me and my wife. We chose a charter school for our two oldest kids. We have four. And we decided that the one that we had chosen was not working for them. So we chose another school. And I'll tell you what, people understand this. They ask us questions, and people have gone making choices. This is something that doesn't exist in the traditional public school. Mm-hmm. If you live in the University City boundary and are going to University City High School, you don't have a choice. Unless you have the means to move into a better public school district or pay tuition at a private school. Otherwise, you are stuck.
And I would say, you know, in terms of statewide authorizers, the state authorizes cyber charters, and they're a great example of when ideology hits reality. 100% of the cyber charters perform significantly worse than the public district schools, and none of them have been shut down. They also are entitled to equal amounts of money, even though they don't actually run schools and have formal teachers that fit them. And then, you know, the question of choice has been about when we defund our public schools to the point of dysfunction, when you throw out an investment, a massive investment into the marketplace, then your caller asked, how do we protect ourselves? And really, the answer has not been good, because the marketplace does not shut itself down. And I'm not a consumer. I want, and I believe that as a parent and as my child who is obligated to go to school, that the state has a responsibility to provide a quality school for them and for every child, in every neighborhood.
But what's interesting about you, Helen, is that you co-founded a charter school.
Correct.
I mean, clearly you saw a need for certain kinds of children, students in the Philadelphia area.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that that is the original vision of charters was to talk about innovative ways of addressing students' needs. And I think that there's room for that. And we certainly developed that. 25% of our children are in charters. The idea that we don't have choice is a very big fallacy and a misnomer that's pushed out by a lot of people. And so what I think what we're talking about is we need to create sustainable systems of balance in which we are dealing with finite resources. We need to talk about quality. We need to talk about parent engagement, and we need to help people ensure that there's equal access to everything.
What happened in the movie Won't Back Down, where the mother, Jamie Fitzpatrick, I think was her character name, her initial response when she wasn't getting a response from the public school was to go look at a charter school. Well, they had a lottery, 400 kids looking for, I think, like three slots in her grade level, didn't get in. The same thing is happening here in Philadelphia. So when Helen says we've got choices, no, you don't. You have tens of thousands of kids on waiting lists trying to get into charter schools. They are essentially saying, my local public school to which I'm assigned is not meeting my kids' needs. And so parents are lining up for these options. Remember that charter schools only get about 80% of what the traditional public school is spending. And again, these are authorized by the Philadelphia School District. And so ultimately, if they are not being shut down for whatever reason, the good news is that parents are not forced to go them. But they might say, hey, this may not be the best option, but it's a heck of a lot better than the school to which I was assigned.
Let me get Dave from Maple Glen to join us on Radio Times. And Dave, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Great
Hi
show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I think the whole thing about choice and charters is a vision from the whole issue, which is that, and I say this as the father of somebody who's been a math teacher in New York for 6 years in public schools and who trained in Philly schools, but the problem is that we're simply not willing to fund education adequately in the United States, and we don't. If we want to solve the problem, we have to have equal funding, so there's no such thing as poor school districts and rich school districts, and we have to fund adequately so that, we have smaller classrooms, and we have to attract teachers, students into education programs who are top students instead of students who couldn't make other majors. And then we have good teachers like other countries do, and we'll have students that can learn because classes will be small enough, but we have to be willing to pay for it. That's okay. What we don't want to do. So okay. we do this choice thing instead.
Let me give Helen a chance to respond to that, and Matthew, then I'll go to you.
Yeah, I appreciate what David said. I mean, he's talking a lot about what we're guaranteeing and not what we're throwing open to the marketplace. I mean, the most important thing to think about is that charters are not anything except a form of governance. They don't ensure quality. They don't talk about class sizes. They don't talk about the quality of the teaching force. They don't talk about parent engagement. They're simply a category. And within the category, you see broad ranges. So it's wrong to equate charters with quality, public schools with failure. And I think that that's a constant mantra, which is a little bit why I talk about that this is the politics of division and derision around education. And instead, what parents really want to talk about is what kind of quality institution are you promising me? Are you promising me lower class sizes? Do we have arts and music in every school? Is there a science lab for my fifth grader? And what kind of mentoring supports are they going to get when they struggle? Those are the questions that continue not to get answered as people play around with structural games and opening up things about choice, and we can't answer the fundamental questions that most people really care about. What is the quality of the education that's happening for my child in that classroom? That is something that charters don't do, and you can't have that just by promoting charters and choice. That's the conversation that all parents want to have, not just what you do to schools, but what happens in them.
Go ahead, Matthew.
So the question of whether we have just been underfunding, that is our problem, because that's the mantra. I think that's what Dave was promoting. I hear what Helen is promoting. It's certainly what the unions have said, is that we're just not putting enough money into education. Well, if more dollars produced more scholars, we'd be there already. As I noted, we have doubled the amount of money into public education over the last 15 years. Our performance has stagnated. other countries, I think Dave even mentioned other countries have far more choice, far more competition, because those are the things that drive continuous quality improvement in every other area of our lives. And the notion that somehow education is exempt from those types of incentives, we're fooling ourselves. And it's why when we keep throwing more money or thinking putting more money into education is going to result in a better outcome. That has not been proven. Even the research shows that more money does not elicit better academic results. That is not the case.
You're shaking your head.
Yeah, I clearly disagree. I mean, I think
the research doesn't support that.
No, I think that the evidence clearly supports that. I think that the highest performing schools in our school districts, public schools do work. I mean, we've got wonderful examples of public school districts that work. Lower Merion's wonderful. Radnor's wonderful. They invest in their schools and they invest in their classrooms, more importantly. And I would bring up places like Finland, the highest performing educational system in the world. And it's interesting when they talk about their program, they said that they didn't shoot for quality. They shot for equality. They wanted to ensure that an equal education for all students was what they were looking for, and then they got the quality from there.
Let me get some more callers in. Dave, thanks for the call. We have Susan from Mount Airy joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
This is a question for Matt. First of all, I wanted to make the comment that the current charter school revision that's being proposed is actually hijacking the special education bill. I think that people should be very concerned about the process as well. But my question is really, who has the right to turn over community resources to private operators? You're talking about a specific group of parents, but we actually have a governance system that keeps communities having some authority. So, for example, could a group of people who live next to a road turn that over to a private operator or a park? Community resources really belong to a larger community, and more people than just the people who have kids in a school have stake in what's happening and should be able to have a say. What do you think?
Thanks, Susan. Go ahead.
Yeah, certainly the idea of a road versus a school is far different. When we have compulsory attendance laws, parents are being told that you must turn your child over to the school. So there is certainly a greater degree of investment that if I'm having to drop my kid off at the school. So I think that the community, of course, ultimately, it's my child who is being affected by the delivery of this government service. So whether or not it is a overturning of bringing in a charter operator or replacing a school board or administration, these are the types of things that we're saying, hey, let's put parents on the top of the totem pole rather than at the very bottom where their voice isn't heard. So it's an effort to say, hey, parents that whose kids are trapped in persistently underperforming schools, let's give them some escape hatch. Now, we wouldn't need this if we had real school choice in Pennsylvania, whereby we funded kids rather than just funding systems, irregardless of the effectiveness of those systems. So this is where we need to head, to say, let's fund children and let them find the best education and allow for that system to work rather than trapping them in schools that don't work.
Let me just ask you a quick question, and even taking us back to parent trigger laws. Apparently, seven states have passed these laws. Other states are considering them. But is there any research on them? Is there anything to say that once you institute these laws and parents use these laws to their benefit, that their children benefit?
Yeah, these are relatively new. So you haven't seen this in effect of the parent trigger. But what's not relatively new are charter schools. Charter schools are in great demand. Parents are wanting them. They're popping up all over the place where they're allowed to pop up. And in Philadelphia, you would see many, many more if parents were given those options. Right now, they're being stopped at the doorstep and being forced to stay in schools that parents are saying aren't working.
Go ahead, Helen.
I mean, I think Susan brought up a great point, which is that this is a communal enterprise. Public schools are a neighborhood institution. They don't just belong to the people who happen to be in the building at any given amount of time. And that does include the parents who are there. I mean, they are the most important people in any given time, but they also aren't the only players. This is a multiple stakeholder issue. The second issue is that charters have not shown any record of success that shows that they demonstrably significantly outperform public schools, and there's been a lot of issues and problems. So
Are you shutting yours down?
Ours has shown a demonstrable level of success.
Well, and I know that there are many all across the state that do the same thing. So the notion that because you're painting
I'm
a
not
broad
talking
brush.
About individual schools. I'm talking about studies that have shown this on a routine level. So, you know, I just think that this idea that charters equal quality is simply not true.
I've never said that. I've said parents need those choices so that they can find the quality school. And if they
And who authorizes the quality school?
Parents, ultimately, the parents that are choosing your charter school that are saying, hey, we like the school, we're going to stay in it.
As opposed to what?
Based on the delivery of the services that are provided at your charter school. So that parents are the ones that ultimately have to determine, is my child learning? They know these things. And then if they're not in your charter school, the good news is that, well, maybe they can get into another charter school if there's not a waiting line.
Yeah, I just don't think that that is any level of insurance. It's sort of opening everything up and saying you have false sense of options when in actuality, as somebody who has had seen her oldest daughter go through 3 or 4 different schools, it was a painful time each and every time. And it was, you know, it was really a struggle. And I think that this idea that choice is the answer is really a false one.
Hold on.
I'm speaking of parents. Let me get Andrew from Fishtown to join us. And Andrew, we're almost out of time, but I want to give you a chance to make your point.
Well, Helen's pointed out that there's a large amount of choice in the system at this point, and that a lot of the charters are not working for people, and there's certainly magnet schools for the kids who were succeeding in public schools. What is this gentleman's answer to the large number of students who are being failed by the system whose parents are not and will never be involved? And that's where you see those kids in he's finding out University City, they're at 5%. I think if you looked at the parental involvement there and the income levels there, you would see that those kids have been herded into schools like this. And those are the schools that are failing. So what is your answer to that? We already have choice.
We've touched on this earlier, but
We don't have choice. Second of all, the only question is, all right, do we maintain the status quo? Because that is exactly what Helen is advocating for. That is what those who don't want these types of choices.
I'm not sure that's what she's advocating.
Well, when you're saying no, we're not going to give parents alternatives.
I didn't say that either.
Well, you're saying we don't have charter schools that work. You're saying you've broad brush painted that they're not quality. And so what we have to do is ultimately is that there are going to be schools that will serve the needs of the kids whose parents aren't taking the responsibility for them. And that is ultimately the only way we'll be able to deal with them. The current model won't work.
And we're almost out of time. I'll give you the last word, Helen. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have over the last decade in Philadelphia, we've explored lots of different options. We've taken a look at lots of different ways to do things, of which choice has been a huge portion of it. And we've struggled to figure out a good way to educate all of our students equitably. And frankly, it's come down to the question of whether we're going to do that investment. And we haven't made that commitment. We haven't had that answer. And we need that now. We need the investment in our schools for all systems to function. And
well,
that's the most important thing.
There's nothing more important than education and our children. And that's Helen Gim, founder of Parents United for Public Education. Also with us, Matthew Briette, the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Well, you want the full Radio Times experience online, including in-studio photos, conversation highlights, your comments, and more. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and you can visit our expanded website at whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoing. Thank you so much for joining us, and do stay with us for Hour 2 coming up next. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you.